ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
Welcome to another episode of The Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Joining us this week is Daily Maverick Associate Editor Ferial Haffagy. Here's what's coming your way. While the GNU looks healthy more than 100 days in, the same can't be said for provincial government. Then, from Palestine to Lebanon, why President Ramaphosa believes South Africa could play an integral mediation role. Later, why Eskom's proposed tariff hikes won't address the real issue.
What's the purpose of that if in fact the impact is that more people just stop paying?
Also, are we turning a corner in the fight against rhino poaching? And we find inspiration in the stories of 35 trailblazers under 35. But first, as pressure mounts on the ANC and President Cyril Ramaphosa to act against Justice Minister Thembi Simelane, some are beginning to say this is all part of a ploy to halt prosecutions in the VBS and state capture matters. We unpack it all.
Ferial, how have you been?
Good morning, Lizanne. It's lovely to be with you again. Busy time, 100 days of the GNU, just generally careening to the end of the year.
Definitely. Now, let's get straight into today's chat, and we have a lot to cover, including the GNU. But first, I want to take a look at our Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development, Thembi Simelane. Last week, she appeared before the ANC Integrity Committee following a joint investigation by Scorpio and News 24 into her alleged links to VBS looting. She continues to maintain that she's done nothing untoward, but I mean, a lot of South Africans aren't convinced. So what's the latest in this ongoing saga?
Well, the Hawks are investigating the minister's receipt of a loan from one of the brokers to the VBS bank. I think we're still far from finished on this story. The minister appeared before the ANC's Integrity Commission. Obviously, those are closed-door meetings, but the Reverend Frank Chikane is tasked with considering or calling members of the ANC who are named in issues which impact on the integrity and ethical standing of the ANC. You'll know that's one of the biggest factors which drove down the ANC support in the last election.
Now, there are some allegations floating around claiming that the case against Simelane is already part of a messy dispute between her department and the NPA. Can you explain to our listeners what some of the main points of contention are, and is there any merit to these claims?
So the claims have come from the EFF and MK parties at Parliament, and I think there's absolutely no truth in them. It's part of a long-running attack on the NPA and its investigating directorate, first by the EFF because it's the older of the two parties, and now also by MK, which is the newcomer party to Parliament. Obviously, both those parties have massive skin in the game, primarily the EFF because you'll know that its leader is at the heart of the instances of corruption at the VBS Mutual Bank.
100 days came and went, and despite many doomsayers, the government of national unity is still standing. But what value does a functional GNU have for citizens of South Africa when governments of provincial unity are crumbling, one metro after the other?
Now, let's move on to the GNU. And just over a week ago, South Africa celebrated 100 days of a government of national unity. And I must say, it went by relatively quietly. I think that perhaps speaks a bit to the way the GNU has functioned to a large extent, you know, kind of quiet and relatively drama-free, which is always great to see. Would you say a number of naysayers are perhaps eating some humble pie at this stage, looking at the state of the GNU?
Naysayers never eat humble pie, in my opinion, Lizanne. But probably this power-sharing agreement was the best possible high road that could have emerged from the election of May 2024. I think at the beginning of the year, certainly amongst our audience, certainly in the country, it was pretty clear that the mood was anxious. People didn't know what was going to happen because it was very clear that the ANC would lose its majority party status. By striking up a 10-party government of national unity as a power-sharing agreement and doing so in 12 days, South Africa became quite a story of a successful election, one where the governing party accepted that it had lost. And now this GNU has allowed an internal competition in the cabinet, which has attracted the imagination, certainly of the economy or the listed parts of the economy. And so you saw the JSE reaching highs that it hasn't ever. And that's also the result of global factors. But generally, business confidence is high in the amount of investments that's actually shovels in the ground is good, but that hasn't trickled down to the ground yet.
And, you know, I was just about to mention as well, I think on a local governance level, many of our listeners are probably asking, but what does the GNU mean for me if our government of provincial unity is failing so dismally? I know a number of Daily Maverick readers asked you this exact question, and you answered some of those questions as well on the Daily Maverick website. What are your thoughts specifically on the state of GPUs and whether the GNU might trickle down to GPU level eventually?
No, I was interested when I sifted all those questions that people saying, so why isn't this spirit of unity and of being focused on the people not really trickling down? And I think that those people like me living Gauteng or Johannesburg, where really the kind of government that you saw before this election remains in place, largely self-interested, internally focused, and not really delivering all that should be to its people. And so I think you'll find in a quality of life survey for Gauteng that most people believe life has become immeasurably worse, that service conditions, service delivery by government has gone down. And that's because the three Gauteng cities are in such dire straits, no matter who runs them. That's Johannesburg, Tshwane, and Ekurhuleni. It's still a big part of the population of the country, and it's a huge part of the GDP. So what happens in the smallest province in the country has ripple effects across South Africa, and that's why I think people are beginning to make those links and ask, like, why isn't life changing more quickly? At a national level, I suppose the biggest way that the impacts can be felt is that we finally, on the period of cutting of interest rates, we saw a first small cut, and hopefully that's the beginning of a cycle.
From setting out South Africa's G20 priorities to emphasizing the important role the African continent could play in the ever-evolving global arena, there was a lot of ground to cover at this year's UN General Assembly. But President Ramaphosa also focused on the present, once again urging world leaders to take action in the worsening conflict unfolding in the Middle East.
Let's move on to the UN General Assembly. You know, while South Africans celebrated Heritage Day, or Braai Day for some, last week, we saw President Cyril Ramaphosa appearing before the 79th General Assembly of the United Nations, in particular to highlight a number of big issues, front and center being the ongoing crisis in Palestine, with Ramaphosa once again emphasizing the Palestinian state solution and again reiterating the importance of a ceasefire and urgent intervention from global leaders. What was your biggest takeaway from this year's address from Ramaphosa?
You know, when you look at the state of the world, Lizanne, and you look at the anemic leadership across the board leading to three theaters of war now, it really was Palestine and Lebanon, which Israel was pummeling even in the face of this meeting of global leaders, which really occupied most of the attention of General Assembly. But in that context, when I listened to our president's speeches trying to pitch South Africa as a multipolar party, one that can play in all the different power conurbations in the world, when you listen to his clarity on Palestine, when you listen to his support for this pact of the future or the summit of the future, I thought that President Ramaphosa came across quite well. I also really enjoyed the focus on the gender apartheid being faced by the women of Afghanistan. And that statement by Meryl Streep that squirrels in Afghanistan have more rights than their women. I thought that was the presentation of the week and certainly a very important focus on what women they are facing.
Yes. Now, we of course can't talk about the assembly without also reflecting on the current situation unfolding in Lebanon. What really struck me or what stuck with me is that I was thinking, you know, in October last year, Ramaphosa warned global leaders that should the Israel-Gaza conflict not be properly addressed, it will escalate. He said something along the lines of it will escalate beyond the borders of Israel and Palestine and end up destabilizing the entire Middle East. Now, looking at what's unfolding in Lebanon, his words are really becoming reality. So the big question now is, what next? What needs to happen? And I know he placed a lot of emphasis on the role Africa could and should play on the global political stage and mediating in a way. But what happens next?
I think what happens next is unfolding before our eyes. Israel seems determined to what it says is clear out Hezbollah from northern Lebanon. But what the world is warning is that Lebanon is going to become another Gaza if urgent steps are not taken. And the most, obviously, the most important one that can happen is that the US and the European Union stop arming Israel to enable this war to happen. Whether that's going to happen is anybody's guess, but October the 7th is certainly going to become a key moment in the world, because obviously that's the 1 year anniversary of the appalling Hamas attacks on Israel. But that what then engendered is a 1 year war and what the ICJ has called a rising genocide against Palestinian people, specifically in Gaza, but also in the West Bank.
As Eskom continues sinking deeper into a debt hole it might never escape from, the desperate electricity supplier is pushing ahead with hefty tariff hikes that could see Eskom more than tripling its annual return. With government bailouts drying up, Eskom says it has little choice but to impose far above inflation increases. But overburdening an already struggling consumer is simply not the answer.
Now, let's talk about Eskom tariff hikes. I mean, it's something that a lot of people are talking about at the moment. And it's once again made headlines this past week after NERSA published Eskom's multi-year revenue application for the period 2026 to 2028. Now, the proposed figures really are mind-blowing. 36.15% for 2026, 11.81% for 2027, and 9.10% for 2028 financial year. And, I mean, that's just for those getting electricity directly from Eskom. For those of us who rely on third-party services such as City Power, we're facing an additional 10% on top of that. So how does Eskom plan on justifying this insane increase?
I suppose Eskom and even the electricity minister, Hussie and Sora Mahopa, they're now in a phase of, well, we're keeping the lights on. And it seems to me that that has to be at any cost. The national imperative is to keep load shedding away and to keep the energy grid going. And therefore, they're saying that these are the allowable tariffs that they can claim. And they've got really clever tariff specialists. They can argue that case before NERSA. But I think, as my colleague Stephen Hurtis wrote in the Daily Maverick, what's the purpose of that if, in fact, the impact is that more people just stop paying? It's become so expensive that even Daily Maverick readers, who are not unemployed people or the poorest of the poor, told us this week that they're having to make choices between the food they buy and keeping their lights on. So these are the cruel binds that South Africans are being forced into. And I'm very glad that the focus is falling on the cost of electricity, because this year as well, most of us have had increases that are at least or much more than double the inflation rate.
Yes. And I was about to raise that point because, as you've said, Stephen Hurtis also wrote a really wonderful piece on exactly this, is the fact that in part municipalities are to blame as well as non-payers. I think around June this year, Eskom said they're owed about 78 billion rands, which is just, I can't even wrap my mind around that amount. And that's money Eskom really cannot do without. So what would you say is the solution that will both serve the people but also help Eskom keep the lights on?
I don't know. I'd have to check it out. But it does look like Eskom is going to have to seek development financing, perhaps from that facility made available by the rich nations to assist with South Africa's transition to renewables. That is to fund the expansion of the grid into the three capes, the eastern, western and northern capes. And that's where you see the wind farms and the mass solar farms that hopefully will be able to integrate a cheaper form of electricity and in the long run bring down the cost of electricity. That is a medium to long-term endeavor, and I think it's only going to be funded from softer loans, from less expensive money. But to suggest that you can palm off those costs onto struggling South Africans, certainly I don't think is possible, because what you'll get is just more people not paying.
Of course, the plan is to host various public hearings across the country. Yes. Those will start on the 18th of November and last until the 4th of December. But in the meantime, the DA has already made moves to block the increase, while further legal action is expected, according to many analysts. So keep an eye on Daily Maverick as well as on Carte Blanche, as we will be providing updates on this as it happens.
From 2012 to 2021, the white rhino population across Africa decreased by a shocking 24%. Government and private bodies joined hands in a desperate effort to save this precious species from extinction. For some time, these efforts seemed hopeless, as the brutal killing of rhinos made headlines week after week. Now, after nearly a decade of decline, white rhino numbers are finally on the increase.
Now let's get into our green shoots.
Yes,
and
please.
We love our rhinos on the show. We've spoken about it many times. Carte Blanche has done beautiful rhino stories in the past year. There's been lots of amazing pieces on Daily Maverick, also showing how we're seemingly winning the decades-long battle against rhino poachers. Now, according to the latest State of the Rhino report, South Africa's white rhino populations are finally on the rise despite ongoing poaching. So we're turning a corner, it seems. And that, for me, is the best news ever.
That was absolutely beautiful to read by Ed Stoddard, who is a financial journalist, but his passion is on the state of rhinos. I think he's written a few books on it. And he noted this report, which shows you that we are beginning to turn a corner. And that certainly is after decades of work by international conservation agencies and by local people to begin to understand how important these animals are to us, to our heritage, and to conservation across our continent. So this was a wonderful piece of work to read. It's well worth looking at his graphic in the story.
They might be young, but these 35 South Africans are showing how the smallest opportunities could change a person's life for the better. Join us as we celebrate this year's 35 Trailblazers Under 35, who, through employment and skill development, are not only making their mark in various industries, but also empowering others.
Let's wrap up this week's show with a look at the 35 Trailblazers Under 35 initiative. It's spearheaded by DM168, which is Daily Maverick's print newspaper that you can get every weekend, and the Youth Employment Service, or YES, which runs a fantastic employment program with great success as well, if you go and look up the history of this organization. Now, out of 3,500 YES alumni, only 35 were selected for this. And there were really some individuals that stood out for me. I think my favorite was Sanda Ngoko, who, despite COVID-19 challenges, managed to build an amazing media company that's now placed him next to global stars such as Beyonce and Kendrick Lamar. Mm-hmm. And then there's also Molemo Moshiho, who really took her love for soccer and turned it into a successful events and media company. And it was just amazing to see these young people really going for it, 100% dedicated to achieving their goals.
Wasn't it just a shot in the arm and a wonderful Heritage Month special report to read? The Youth Employment Service, of course, it finds jobs for people specifically in those areas of the economy that are growing and possibly in the high-value future-facing sectors. So it, for example, trains young drone pilots or baristas or people who want to occupy the spaces of the two that you set out there. So Youth Employment Service certainly want to keep an eye on. Also Harambee, another Youth Employment Accelerator, announced last week that it marked its 4 million work opportunities for young South Africans. So slowly we begin to show at least how to integrate young people into the economy, which must be the biggest challenge that our country faces. Mm.
And what really stood out for me from this is that every single candidate, when you go and read their biographies, every single one of them is so eager to give back. They go to the lengths of setting up their companies, getting the skills, but then they also focus on teaching others how to do that. And I just loved that because literally every single one of them had that in common, which I found truly inspiring. And I think we can all learn from that.
Amen to that. I think that your generation really are the ones who bring a different set of values to the economy and to the country.
But that's all we have time for this week. Ferial, as always, it's been wonderful hearing your insights on really a myriad of topics today. I really wish you a lovely week further and good luck in this mad rush to the end of 2024.
You have a beautiful week too, and I always love speaking to you. Take care, Lizanne.
Lovely. Thanks. Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.